Found an interesting statistic the other day. There are 38 armed conflicts going on in the world listed on an official website today. 38. Five of those started in 2011. That means that 33 of them have been ongoing, some since the mid-60s, a couple of them since 1948, 1949. 62, 63 years of conflict in a country. I cannot imagine living like that, with wars going on all around me all the time, with that kind of stress, with seeing soldiers out on the streets with their rifles ready to shoot at any moment, and never knowing when you're going to be in some store or someplace and some bomb is going to go off and just totally obliterate you. It's a continuing problem. There's some recent ones that were not on that list that include internal conflicts in countries like Russia. They pulled one of those deals like it's been going on in this country, Occupy Wall Street, only it was Occupy the Kremlin, and they're just chanting at the bit to get Putin out of office. Of course, we've had in this country our Occupy the Wall Street battle going on that could have some far-reaching consequences. The other day, Canada warned the U.S. something about the oil pipeline coming down from Alaska into our northern states, and just if you do this, we're going to do this to you type of thing. Iran right now is threatening the Strait of Hormuz, where most of the Mideast oil gets shipped through, and that's why our gas prices went up 30 to 40 cents on Wednesday. Just thought you might like that little tidbit. I look at all these facts, and I have to say one thing. It takes courage. It takes real courage to live in the world every day. Courage is the ability to confront fear, pain, danger, uncertainty, or intimidation. There's a couple of different kinds of courage. There's physical courage, which is defined as the ability to face death in addition to the above. Courage, ability to confront fear, pain, danger, uncertainty, or intimidation. Let me tell you a story. When I was growing up, the garage at my parents' house was about 8 feet behind the house. And a family room stuck out there, and that backyard was really dark at night. And we'd come home late, and the garage was not attached to the house. We'd come home late at night and pull that car in the garage and come out and close the garage door. We didn't have automatic garage door openers either. We had to pull the door down. And we would walk past there, and there was more than once or twice that as we would walk past that really dark spot, you'd see some beady eyes in the dark back there. Well, we didn't live too awful far from this big park, and it was not unusual for a raccoon to get up into the neighborhood, and you could hear noises out there between the house sometimes, and it was just kind of scary. Every once in a while, I would have to take the trash out to the garage at night, or once I started driving, get home myself late in the evening and pull the car in the garage and walk around there and just kind of look around the edge and then run past that spot real quick. Because there were a couple of times that animals jumped out at us, and it was kind of scary. And I got to tell you, it took a little bit of courage once in a while, especially if I thought I heard something, to run past that spot. My dad finally put a big spotlight on the back of the house and just let it shine out in that area at night until everybody was in safely in the house and the doors were locked. And then he would turn the light out simply because he was too cheap to leave it on all night. Didn't want to pay that electric bill. Courage, the ability to confront fear, pain, danger, uncertainty, or intimidation. But there's another kind of courage that I think is even more important, and that is moral courage, the ability to act rightly in the face of popular opposition, shame, scandal, or discouragement. Moral courage. I think that's the area where most of us need courage. acting right, doing the right thing in the face of what goes on in our daily lives. And not doing the right thing just because it's the right thing to do, but doing the right thing because it's what God expects out of us, and God will give us help to do it. Ephesians 6:10, which I mentioned at the beginning of the service, is, "Be strong in the Lord and put on His mighty power." That wraps it up. God is strong and He wants you to be strong. But verse 11 says, "Put on the full armor of God. Take everything the Master has set out for you, the well-made weapons of the best materials, and put them to use so you will be able to stand up to everything the devil throws your way." Wow, that kind of just puts it out to us. When Paul wrote this, he was in prison. He had spent a number of different times in his life in prison. And as he was in prison, he watched the soldiers. Remember as well, he had grown up around all of this and had watched these soldiers his whole life. Just to give you some brief thoughts here, Paul had been in Ephesus for 3 years. He had a very, very successful ministry there. It was so successful that the silversmiths who made the idols that people worshiped were just about put out of business because he simply got them worshiping God, and they were no longer buying the things that the silversmiths made. He finally had to leave there. He went to Jerusalem. He was arrested. He was sent to Rome, where he did time in the prison and wrote this letter about 60 AD, probably while he was being watched over Roman soldiers. I'm sure that from his cell he could see their training and all the things that were in his mind from his days of growing up, and he probably started asking a lot of questions about these soldiers. Roman soldiers were tough. Nick, I don't know how many hours they make you march with that 60 pounds on your back, but Roman soldiers had to march 5 hours carrying 60 to 100 pounds, set up their camp, spend the night, get up the next morning, put their camp away, and then march again for another 5 hours, sometimes all fighting a battle while they were out marching. They had to march a minimum of 4.5 miles per hour for about 5 hours a day. That would be 22.5 miles. The minimum they had to travel was 18 miles in a day. Now, we may laugh about that and go, "Oh, you're crazy, Pastor." I don't know about you. It took me about 10 minutes to drive, maybe 10, 12 minutes to drive across town this morning to get to the church. Now, I got to thinking, if I were to try walking over here to the church, it's 7 miles from my house to here, it would take me, 2.5 to 3 hours at the rate I walk. I can walk over to Olivet in about 35 minutes, and that's just about 1.5 miles. So you do the math, it comes up to about 2.5 hours. Provided I could keep up that constant pace the whole trip. I would dare say I would be stopping here to get something to drink and there to get something to drink and there to sit down and rest. We're just not made to do that kind of thing, most of us. These guys, while they were marching, carried equipment. They had their helmet on, they had the breastplate, they had the shield, they had the sword, they had the belt. They had heavy boots on their feet to protect their feet and to keep them walking good without twisting their ankles, without getting stuff stuck through their feet. Now, I thought about these different things that they carried, and as I was thinking about that, I was thinking about a helmet to protect their head. Well, none of us want to get our brains scrambled, and so while our kids are out riding their bikes now, we make them wear little helmets that most of us never wore when we were riding our bikes. And we wear hard hats when we work, and there's football helmets and motorcycle helmets and all kinds of things that protect our brain, protect our heads so we don't get scrambled up there. I was thinking about the breastplate, which was metal that weighed some, and police officers now wear a rather thin thing, and it's lightweight, but it really protects and keeps the bullets from going through it. We probably haven't seen too many shields lately, but I've watched the pictures of the SWAT teams in action with their shield. And while the shield that was carried back then was to keep flaming arrows from shooting at them, now they use it to keep bottles and bricks and other things from hitting them as they're walking into a bad situation. A few weeks back, I was helping Kurt clean up a mess in their driveway, and it was from some storm damage this summer, and And finally, the contractors got done doing the work on their house. So we're cleaning all this mess up. And the night before we were cleaning that mess up, I dreamt that I stepped on a nail and that Kurt had to take me to the emergency room, that it went right clean through my foot. Well, I put some boots on the day we went to do that. And carefully walking around that, and I started feeling something just pricking the bottom of my foot. And I looked, and there was a nail in the bottom of my boot. Well, I pulled it out. It was just a little short one. And before long, I felt something pricking the bottom of my other foot. And I looked, and there was just a little short nail there, but just enough to where it had gone through, just enough I could feel it. You know, before the day was over, I had stepped on 7 nails. Kurt never stepped on one, but I had stepped on 7 nails that day, and I was so glad that I had those boots on. If I'd have worn my tennis shoes that day, I would have been in trouble. Well, I think of those boots that the soldiers wore. They were heavy duty. Nothing was going to get through them. Nothing was going to cause them to twist their ankle. They gave them good support so they could keep walking properly. Paul was very familiar with the routine that these soldiers went through, with what they wore, with what it meant. And the Ephesians would have known this as well. So when Paul starts writing to them about putting on the armor of God, he's talking to them about something that's very familiar to them. And he tells them that we are in a battle as Christians. It's a spiritual battle, and we must be prepared for the battle or we will lose. Now, as I looked at all of this and I went into some history of the Roman Empire, one of the reasons the Roman Empire failed is because the soldiers began to complain about their routine and about all this heavy stuff that they had to wear. And so they were allowed to wear less armor and not exercise as much, and they began to lose their conditioning and went on a downward spiral and just weren't able to fight the battles and keep up the pace that they at one time were prepared to do. Paul is telling us, be prepared. We are in a battle. Don't let down your guard. Don't allow anything to come into your life that could destroy you spiritually. Put on that full armor of God, everything He has for you, so you can be strong to get through life. I see 3 fronts of preparation where the enemy in particular can destroy us. The first one is our mind. Verse 17 says, take the helmet of salvation and put it on your head. Also talks about the sword of the Spirit there. The mind is a powerful thing. I've had a couple people tell me today that they were brain dead. I understand that feeling sometimes, but you just can't hardly think. You can't hardly comprehend the next thing that you have to do. We get so busy. But as I think about that, a good night's sleep will take care of that. Getting a few things done and sorted out will take care of that. But when I really stop and think about what is going on in our lives, we can get so much into our heads and so much going on and so many things happening that we can get on some tangent and we just get cooked on that thing and we forget who we're worshiping. Someone put it to me real nicely this morning. Too many times we just forget to get on our knees and pray. And so our minds get all scrambled up. We get involved in our churches and we get involved in our daily lives and all these warring factors come after us and they grab after our attention. And if we're not careful, we lose our focus on God. I was thinking about things that happen in the churches, and we get conflicts over ways that we worship. We get conflicts over who wore what to church and who didn't do this and who didn't do that and all those kind of things, and those things work on us. I've got a friend who started I call it an out-of-the-box church up in Flint, Michigan. He's reaching people that nobody else can reach. He has his church is in a storefront. They got 30,000 square feet in a shopping center. They took an area where there was a big garage door where shipments could come in, and they made that into an area where they work on people's cars. Fantastic ministry. He was a car mechanic himself. He took another area of his church and made it into a big gymnasium, and they have wrestling in there 2, 3, 4 nights a week. He's got another area in his church where some craft stuff, all kinds of different things go on. It was just announced in the Flint, Michigan Daily Journal the other day, a big article, Tattoo Parlor in Church. Well, it's his church. Very interesting. You cannot believe the comments, both for and against that, going around. And as I was watching all that stuff on Facebook the other day and on other places that people are commenting, I thought, you know, we can criticize all we want, but the only thing it really affects is our own minds and our own personal spiritual lives. That's what Satan wants to do. He wants to get into our minds, and when we start thinking about reaching out for him and we start thinking about living for him, if he can scramble our brain and get us thinking about other things, he's going to tear us apart. Verse 12 of Ephesians 10 says, "We are not warring against other human beings, but we are against the authorities and the powers of the dark world." Satan is trying to divide us. And so, we are told to put on the helmet of salvation, to protect our minds so the wrong things will not get in there, so we won't become grumbly, gripey Christians, so we won't get off onto something that's worldly that's going to get our attention and pull us away from God. And believe me, there's plenty out there to do that. Our mind, of all the things I've lost, I missed my mind the most. And while we can laugh at that, it can be a very true thing. Where's your mind today? What were you thinking when you did such and such? Have you been allowing God to have that peace in your mind that allows you to have that straight thinking? The second area that I see that can really tear us apart is our emotions. We're talked about here with the breastplate of righteousness, with the belt of truth. Verse 14 says, "Stand firm then with the belt of truth buckled around your waist and the breastplate of righteousness in place." And as I was thinking about that belt of truth, I was thinking about those belts that you buy now that if you're doing heavy lifting, you're supposed to wear at work, that protect you and kind of hold everything in tight and protect your back and protect your stomach area and so you don't lift and rip anything and get a hernia and that type of thing. And I was thinking about the breastplate of righteousness as the suits that the police officers wear that bullets can't come through. And what I was thinking about is it needs to protect our heart, our vital organs. And back in the time when a lot of this was written, people really thought that a lot of everything came right out of the heart, right out of the emotions. We talk about protecting our heart. If you don't feel good, you're going to feel it in here. If you're upset, your mind may be going 1,000 miles an hour, but you're going to feel it in here. So we find ways to protect our heart. Through exercise, through laughing. There's somebody in this church who brings me dark chocolate because, you know, the darker the chocolate, the better it is for your heart. Boy, do I like that dark chocolate. Some of us drink vinegar every morning. It's supposed to clean your innards out and protect you. We exercise. We do things to keep from being stabbed or shot in the vitals. The breastplate of righteousness. The belt to keep from straining. And when it comes down to it, it comes down to this. If Satan can attack our emotions, if he can get us to thinking crazy, get off on some wild thing that doesn't even matter, if he can get us depressed or anxious, he can win some battles and he can keep us down. The breastplate of righteousness. Right living in my own life. Then I think the third thing that Satan can attack us in is our actions. Verse 15, with your feet fitted with the readiness that comes from the gospel of peace. Our feet take us where we need to go. We walk from the house to the car so we can get to where we need to go. We walk around the shopping center picking up the things that we need. We walk from point A to point B so we can get to where we need to go. But if our actions become unholy, if our actions get to where they're not honoring God, then we have a problem. So I say we need to put on the feet that are fitted to follow God. sure, strong, steady. So we don't twist our spiritual ankles. So we don't put a nail in our spiritual feet. So we can act properly for God. I had this thought, if Satan get us to act irrationally, just one bad action or one bad reaction can destroy us and destroy other people just in an instant. So you look at all this and you look back at what is Paul saying. Paul is saying, be strong in the Lord. To be strong, we exercise. A runner will run. A singer will do things to increase their lung capacity. A person who is a basketball player will practice extra so they can do their task better. A person who is a musician will practice their art and keep on practicing it so they can do it better. If I'm going to be the Christian that I need to be, I need to prepare myself through spiritual exercise. Be strong in the Lord and in His mighty power. It's through exercise, it's through proper dress, so to speak, and so I put on God's armor. Verse 16 says, in addition to all this, take up the shield of faith. The shield of faith. I've thought about that. A few weeks ago, I spoke about our hope in Jesus Christ. We have faith in Jesus Christ. Faith is believing in something we cannot see, but yet we know it is really there. My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus Christ. So I take up the shield of faith and I allow Him to make me strong. And what does the Bible say? So that I can extinguish all the flaming arrows of Satan. I don't know any time lately that I've had a flaming arrow shot at me. Literally, but Satan sure tries to throw some things at us that are a total surprise, and with the shield you deflect them. With God on our side, we can deflect them. And then I come down to one more thing here, verse 18. Pray in the Spirit on all occasions with all kinds of prayers and requests. Pray, pray, pray. Too many times these little things come up into our lives and the first thing we do is, what can I do about this? If we would make the first thing that we do our prayer, we would find we're being strong in the Lord and He's going to give us the wisdom to get through those things. But too many of us, too many times, go the other way and get worried about things and let our brains get scrambled and let our emotions get all mixed up because we didn't ask God what He thought about it. And then I look at the last part of verse 18. Be strong by being alert. Be alert and always keep on praying for all the saints. It's just another reminder to pray for each other, but it's another reminder to be aware of what's going on around us. Be alert. To get through 2012, you have to pray. You have to trust. You have to pray some more. You have to trust. You have to follow God through all the daily battles. You know, we talk about putting on Christ. I got up this morning and I cleaned up and I put on my suit and I put on my white shirt and I put on my tie so I would look presentable for today. I need to get up in the morning and spend some time praying and remind God that I need Him to get through every single day. Put on the full armor of God. Allow Him to keep you in His peace. Father, this morning, we're just reminded that we live in a world that's a tough one. There's things coming at us all the time. And if we don't have You to depend on, we've lost it all. And so, Father, I just ask You today to remind us. Remind us to get clothed in You, to be clothed in Your righteousness, to allow You to protect us from anything that could go wrong. Father, we're going to leave here in just a few moments and ask that You go with us and that You guide us through this day and through this week. We're just going to give You the praise for all You do. Father, reminded again of those in our church that are ill, of June Rocosi in the hospital, of others that have gone through really tough times this week that just really need your love and your comfort. Thank you, Father, for being there. Amen.